This is a production of Cornell University.
Meeting will come to order. This is the second meeting of the Cornell Graduate Professional Student Assembly for the spring 2012 semester, February 6th, 2012. It is now 5:33 p.m. Welcome, everybody. We'll do a very quick roll call of the voting members and then move to the first item on our agenda. Vice President Susan Murphy. Randa Adra, absent. Kyle Albert is excused. Brian Alkemeyer is excused. Stephen Ahn.
Here.
Nicole Baran.
Here.
YJ Chen.
Here.
John Chechelewski. Evan Portem is here. Andrew Elliott.
Here.
Carl Perkinghoff. Unexcused. Marquise Hawkins.
Here.
Yevgeny Israelit.
Here.
James Keach.
Here.
Allison Nash. Unexcused. Rebecca Robbins.
Here.
Eric Smith.
Here.
Mia Tuto.
Here.
Michelle White.
Here.
Crystal Wilson. Unexcused. Thank you, everybody. First on our agenda, Vice President Susan Murphy. So, welcome. Thank you for coming to join us. For those of you that I didn't tell, President Scorton was also supposed to join us, but unfortunately was called out of town at the last minute, and so won't be able to make our meeting today. At our breakout session 2 weeks ago, we all broke up into several groups, and one of the topics for discussion was developing questions for you today. The leadership took the liberty of gathering those questions together, summarizing, rewriting, that sort of thing, and I sent them to you last week. So I thought that might be a good place to begin, if I may.
Do you want me up there? That's going to address you?
Wherever is best for you. You probably just don't want to sit directly in front of the blind gate.
What I'm going to do, I'm going to lean on this. I lean, that would have to just...
Sure.
You're right, because if I sit right there,
yeah,
be right
that
there.
Might be a violation of your Eighth Amendment.
Well, thank you again for the opportunity to join you. And I do bring President Scorton's apologies, and hopefully we'll find a way to connect sometime this spring. So I have four questions that were presented to me. I'll talk about them in comments, and then I'll try to start with a question and an answer. We can see if there's more discussion, and then we'll go out from there. I want to first say thank you for two major initiatives from last year. One, your fee, getting through the fee setting process. Congratulations, that was accepted by the trustees and is officially in place. And secondly, I just received notice, and this may have come in right before the holidays, but the work that you and the SA did together in codifying the process by which student elected trustees are done, and that was a great help in the trustee membership committee. That too has been codified, and so that is now in place, and Evan will also be hearing, if he hasn't already, from the chair of the committee. This is your time to report, if I remember correctly, in March. We're also going to make sure you're at the joint meeting of the Academic Affairs and Student Life Committee, and we will be looking to find ways so that the SA and GPSA leaders are more regularly connected with the trustee meetings as a way of adding the student voice into their deliberations in addition to the two student elected trustees. So I have the four questions I have. One is Folk Day, and why does it cost so much, and what are you going to do about it, if anything? The second is to talk a little bit about the Cornell Tech Campus in New York City and what that might mean for the Ithaca campus. The third has to do with one of the elements of the Graduate Community Initiative, otherwise known as the GCI, that talked about establishing collaborative spaces, and it appears that that may be part of the Cornell campus in New York, and how might that happen in Ithaca. And the last has to do with campus-to-campus connections, and in particular, some concerns about the rise of costs in campus-to-campus buses. So let's go back to question one. A topic about which I have heard a great deal from both sides of the conversation, but my interpretation of what you're raising is the issue of the undergraduate student assembly view of Slope Day of this being a major initiative, when it grows from 160,000, which is already large, to 275, which is extraordinary, and that they are willing to tax themselves at that level, and the administration has allowed that taxation to occur, because their rate of increase does not equal your rate of increase. There, at the Slope Day Steering Committee, are having some conversations about what the quality of access or the kind of access for undergraduates and graduates. And if this vision of Slope Day, as they state in their charters, quote, fostered an environment where students, staff, faculty can come together as one Cornell, how can that be when there's such disparate beliefs about what's worthy of investment, and what role should the administration play in stepping in and telling the undergraduates they can't? Is that a fair distillation of the probably the many sentiments that went into this one question? So here's how I think about Slope Day, and I'll give you the Susan Murphy view, and then I'll try to see if I can more generalize that. Slope Day, as I think all of you may know, we could actually trace back the historical length as far back as the early 1900s. On again, off again of campus events. The current iteration came to be in about the mid, early 80s, thanks to Cornell Dining taking a barbecue out on the slope as a way of saying thank you to students for putting up with some construction that had gone on in the Ivy Room at the time. And that was at a time when the drinking age was 18. So back when I was at Cornell, you could buy beer as a straight as easily as you could buy Coke. And so they had this barbecue on the slope, and a beer truck pulled up, and a Coke truck pulled up, and soda trucks pulled up, and it was an afternoon day on the slope. Drinking age changes. No longer can we easily serve alcohol. And students begin to bring their own. My predecessor tried to shut down Slope Day by offering an alternative event up on North Campus, and our students took back the slope. They did t-shirts, take back the slope. The university is up on North Campus throwing the party, and all the students are on West Campus. So the year I became vice president, which was a long time ago, 1994 or 5, so it was in the spring of 95, the event was totally out of control. We actually got a call that year from the hospital asking us please not to send any more students to the hospital because there were so many inebriated students up there. So it was clear we had to do something. We were obviously violating the law, there were health and safety issues. So we began this long process of working with the undergraduates, because they were really the ones at the time who were interested in continuing this tradition, to figure out how to make it a safer event. And ultimately, our goal was to contain the event. And the students used to put on their own music. It was a student band. We had taken the music away, given the behavior we were seeing. And we ended up negotiating that when we constrained the event with fences, we would bring the music back, as long as they paid for it. So that started this process of turning it into a large concert. And you will know I'm of a different generation when I tell you that the year they brought Snoop Dogg here, and I opined that I had never heard Snoop Dogg's music, they gave me a CD so I wouldn't be completely out of it. And after two songs, I gave it back to him and said, got it, I don't think I need to hear the record. Well, it was a CD, we didn't even have them downloaded. So it is an event that is one that I think it's fair to say that we view from the administration that if it's going to happen, it needs to happen in a safe manner. We were having particular difficulties with high school students coming. And one year, the first hospitalization was a 16-year-old. And so that's why we put some of the, now you have to swipe the card to go to the university, you have to swipe it again to be able to buy alcohol. And the students, the undergraduates, have taken this on to make it a marquee event. I would be the first to admit that I'm not entirely comfortable with how much money they're investing in this. It used to be that we would pick up the safety costs and they would pick up the programming costs. That left us with a deficit, quite frankly, as we had to increase the safety and increase the control as the headline band kept growing. So we've actually put those costs back on the students. And that increased some of their costs. So, you know, this year we're probably at one of those tipping points because philosophically we're not wanting to step in and micromanage how you guys set your fee. That's one of those responsibilities that the trustees have given to the president, and the president has delegated to the students, and believes pretty strongly in saying it's up to you guys to figure out what's an appropriate charge for each other and toward what end. Now, there's been a couple times in my tenure as the president, vice president, we have stepped in where we thought we were going down a path that was, if not illegal, inconsistent with our rules. This is not one of them. This is really a judgment call. And at what point have we gotten to a place where it's really over the top? I suspect Natalie Rafson will be at the March meeting giving her report in the same way Evan will be giving his report. We'll get some comments from the trustees because her predecessor got grilled pretty hard by the trustees about why are you spending that much money? Why aren't you doing it for something else? And I think that's an argument that they need to have. We have had a lot of conversation with the undergraduates about this rate of increase not being able to continue. And I know that the SA had conversation with the Slope State Programming Board about, and I don't know, frankly, where you guys settled in the negotiation back and forth, but has indicated to the Slope State Programming Board, if the GPSA doesn't grow at the same rate, don't come back and start to tax the undergraduates even more. You've got to figure out a different system. So we're at a point that I think the next time when we get into the setting of the fee, which will be 2 years from now, I'm not going to be charged to prevent them, but before we do that, we'll have a very serious discussion about. It'll be really next spring as they get ready to go through the fee setting process the subsequent fall. I hope that the SA and GPSA and the Slope State Programming Board come to a decision that at least is amicable. It may not be one that is fully embraced. As I said, I haven't had an update recently about where the charges, in terms of the charging tickets above and beyond what the allocation is or not. I don't know where that actually stands.
I can give you some update on
okay.
that. Right now, the discussion between the Slope State Programming Board and the GPSA, certain members of the GPSA that are familiar with this issue, leads us to believe that we are going to get ticketed at the event no matter what the situation is, because the fee that we are offering to give them, part of the fee that we're offering to them, is not sufficient to give us free admittance. So regardless of how much money we get charged, whether it's $25 or some prorated fee, if we decide to continue extending to them the amount of the fee that we've offered, there will be tickets. And I think that, one of the issues behind this question is also that we're fearful that if we have graduates and professional students ticketed versus being able to have free admission to the events like first class citizens, we would be at a disadvantage in future years when it comes to speaking and programming, and also that it changes significantly the idea of what the UNSCCOT is to do that. I don't know if you have an opinion on whether that actually is the case or not, but if it does change the nature of the event with a third of students not being able to participate without buying tickets beforehand or not.
It probably will have some impact. I mean, I think it's, in some ways it's wrong to say that you're attending for free, which is, are you paying for the, by the event, are you paying overall? And so I think, for example, the reason we charge our alumni who wish to come back, as many, many do, is because they are not paying any other way than other than having a ticket, because they don't have a fee. I think it's an appropriate expectation on their part that the student communities for whom this event is really existing have a financial stake in the game. The question becomes what's the appropriate and fair way to do that? And I think there are two judgments to that. One is, what's the interest from the grad professional community in doing it? And so it seems to me that a legitimate conversation that I interpret that you guys have been having is trying to assess that in the level of the fee that you charge, because there's not the same perceive groundswell support as broadly across the graduate professional community as the undergraduate see across the undergraduate community. So you're trying to respond to that by, you know, what you're saying is a reasonable fee, and I understand the reasoning behind that. You know, I also understand that if there are costs to be incurred, they've got a budget they have to meet, so they've got to figure out how they're going to solve that problem. Because we're not going to, the administration, which is undergraduate tuition dollars, professional school, well, some graduate tuition dollars that come from research grants, are not going to underwrite the event. So it's a tough dilemma.
But they choose the budget. I mean, they choose how much money they want to spend on a performer and how much they want to subsidize any of these other events that they have on the game, the prizes, everything. How much water they buy is the decision that they make. Basically, how much they charge for the event is up to them.
And the GPSA has no involvement in any of that planning process at this point. Is that part of the problem?
Well, we can send a liaison to their executive board, and of course it is certainly true their board is elected. Any student can run for a position on that board. It is entirely possible that a whole group of graduate students could run for all the slope day positions, and there could be a graduate student chair of that committee next year. My experience has been that graduate students tend not to run for those positions.
It's not high in the priority.
Yeah, and for that matter,
it's time allocation.
And for that matter, it's difficult for us to even fill the liaison position. So
they're in line part of the dilemma.
Yeah.
You know, because you're trying to, you know, you have an opportunity to have a voice and a vote for understandable reasons, but depending on where you sit, whether it's acceptable or not, you know, that's not being exercised. So, you know, if you will, the power of the majority is setting the group. And I think then it becomes an issue of whether the GPSA says, okay, as a body, we don't see ourselves valuing this, so you know what, we're going to lower the fee we charge other people, everybody, so we're not going to include this. And then people who really want to go pay their ticket. That's one school of thought. You know, the other is that we try to work with them and see if we can end up with a different kind of conversation a year from now. You know, I do, given the rules of how fees get set, and you know, here I'll be out of my element pretty quickly, but there, if you take it off entirely, it does put you in a weaker position coming back, I think. That's typically the case. So it would seem to me that if there's some way that you keep what the body thinks is a reasonable allocation, the question then becomes, does that become a little bit like what happens with concert commission bills? It doesn't give you a free ticket, it gives you a discount. So you end up with a visitor ticket, which is, let's call it $25, X dollars, and you give it, you know, a GPSA version, which is a discounted ticket, because you've already paid as a body some number, and then those that are paying at a much higher rate, you know, aren't having to buy a ticket, because their fee is basically that ticket. That may be something that you're in the middle of a discussion about, but
yeah, we've offered $350, and it's my understanding of the will of this body that there's no desire to take that away from them. Now they may choose to turn it down, which would be, you know, in terms of outcome, would be the same. But I think it, you know, does matter that we are, you know, making a good faith effort to increase them, and really to increase them significantly.
I mean, if I were their advisor, which I'm not, but I would encourage them, if you thought it was workable, to think about that tiered approach. Because you as a body are putting in more than the strangers. You certainly shouldn't be taxed the same amount as a ticket for what somebody who's not putting in anything, and it would be a way of preserving. So that's just my 2 cents on the subject.
Are there other questions on this topic?
Okay.
Seeing none? Shall we move to our second question?
So, the second question, it is an exciting time to be a Cornellian. It's a little scary because we frankly still don't have a clue what this now means, but we're going to figure that out later. So, the concern is, how do we envision maintaining the strength of the faculty, the curriculum of the Ithaca campus while blazing this new trail? I think the answer to that is, quite frankly, through a lot of hard work. the existence of the Cornell Tech campus is actually quite consistent with our general priorities for the institution. I wanted to just get them across, but I don't disclose it. If President Skorton were here, he would have talked to you about what he sees to be four broad institutional priorities. One of which is, the first priority is to recruit and retain superb faculty in every field. The second is public engagement. The third is a focus on internationalization. And the fourth is a priority for student access. So if you think about those first three, retaining the best faculty, public engagement, and internationalization, the Cornell New York Tech campus is absolutely aligned with that and consistent with, you know, where we are headed institutionally. I think the biggest challenge will fall to the departments who will be most engaged in the Cornell New York Tech campus, particularly in phase one, as they try to figure out finding the best faculty, which ones belong here in Ithaca as their home base, and which ones, although they'll have their department affiliation here, will be based in New York City. And some of that, quite frankly, will be the nature of the faculty's research. If you're going to be in information science, as an example, if you're going to be on a very theoretical level, you may find being based here better. If you're really on a track that's looking to commercialization and entrepreneurship, you're going to want to be there. The generosity of Chuck Keeney's gift for $350 million, quite frankly, I think eases a lot of our initial concerns, because if this had been a direct fundraising competition to the campaign that's already in existence, I think the concern might have been more heightened. But in essence, we have been given this incredible gift of financial support for the first phase. So it's really about a matter of execution, and some of that's how do we make sure we've got staff there, staff here, what's the faculty priority here, what's the faculty priority there, and running them in a simultaneous fashion. And as I said, some of us, you know, looking at student and academic services and student life, you know, I frankly didn't pay any attention to this process in the fall because our part of the world wasn't going to matter an iota about whether Cornell was going to get selected as the winner of this competition or not. Now, all of a sudden, I'm going to have to think quite hard about how am I going to partner with whoever's going to be the administrative lead for this campus around matters of housing, dining, healthcare, student activities, crisis response, and, you know, try to figure out what's appropriate for us to outsource, what's appropriate for us to partner with a medical school that is literally right across the river, what's appropriate to be entirely self-contained because there's nothing like it here and we don't really need to worry, and what do we need to have anchor here but deliver there. So, example, although this is not yet determined, one can imagine we will probably outsource some of the housing. That may make sense for us to work with a developer to build housing that has a broader appeal. That hasn't been determined, but that would seem to me to be a very logical discussion. At the other end of the spectrum, the campus code of conduct, because this is an Ithaca-affiliated campus, will apply to students who are at the Roosevelt Island campus. So how do we administer that? And when there are violations of petty thievery or more serious, it gets adjudicated, and not because Mary Beth Grant should be going back and forth once a week. How do you be able to do that in a very timely fashion? How do we do crisis response when that might occur? And what role might the medical school play in helping us with that, given what they do, and do we have to create? So those are all things that we will be undertaking. Certainly the graduate school has a lot on its plate because there are some degrees that need to be registered, and the administration of these degrees will come out of the graduate school here. But again, what's going to be appropriate for them to have on site? What do you do by technology? So I think those are some of the issues. And I think the question you're raising is one all of us in the administration, and I dare say the faculty and the departments are quite sensitive to. And it's something to keep an eye on, because the last thing we want to do is have just the enormously exciting opportunity to track on the home campus. This is really meant to be, you know, a win-win for all of us. And that's the challenge that we have to make that happen. So let me stop with that and see what second questions or other issues that might pertain. Whether, Brenda, you've had any conversations yet in the graduate school on any of the practical issues like degrees and systems and things like that.
It's all been celebratory to this point. I think Susan said as we get into student life, and certainly the degree granting ability is also contingent on the State Department of Education. So there's lots of machinations that we'll need to figure through.
I think within the next couple of weeks at the latest, we'll be in a position to, I think the provost will be ready to announce the leadership formally for that campus, both academic and administrative. And Vice President Mary Oppenheim, our Vice President for Human Resources and Patient Services, has been working on sort of a think piece about how we might organizationally put this together that she's getting ready to share with several of us to begin to put that in place.
Are there any other follow-up comments on this topic?
All right, let me be quick.
Oh, there's one in the back there.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sir.
Yeah, is there any plan for student accessibility of the campus facility for New York Bank?
That
they who are already part here work there, and will we also have access to the facility if we go to New York City and Cornell too?
That's a good segue because that's our next question.
Right. I think all of those are questions to be answered, but I think the intent is yes. I mean, this is a Cornell University facility, so I would assume, except where there may need to be secure buildings for research purposes or whatever, that your ID cards would be your ID card. But those are, that's all the kinds of things that are on the list that we're going to need to have to make very clear what are the limitations and what are barriers that don't need to be barriers that we're going to have to overcome. You know, it's the same thing I say, a version of this set of questions has come from the undergraduate community and saying, well, gosh, you're putting these graduate degrees there, don't we get to benefit at all from the experience? And I would say that we would anticipate at some point an undergraduate would like to spend a semester down there or be working with a faculty member in a research project that might be down there. But a lot of that would be unfolded. So I guess a piece of advice I would give to you as a grad body and working with the grad school is keep, you know, a list of particular questions, because those will be good benchmarks for us to say, have we thought about that? Have we solved that problem? Is that an issue we need to address? So don't be shy about writing me, or as we understand who the administrative lead or the faculty lead will be, writing those people as they develop. A lot to do with the next 2 years before the property is turned over to us, and then in 5 years by the time the first building opens up. Never mind having students enrolled in some way sooner than later.
Any other quick thoughts on this? If not, we'll move on to our final one.
Seeing my colleagues in the back for their presentation, I will be quick. Good to see you. So the next one has to do with concerns around increase in the cost of campus-to-campus shuttle as well as short line, and what, you know, sort of how can we expand connectedness going forward. So I have a particular response from Q Wong, who is the Vice President for Facilities, so let me just share with you a couple of ideas. So he believes that the recent fare increase is applying only to riders who do not charge university accounts. So it seems to me if you're on a research grant, and that's why you're going back and forth, and you have an account you can charge it to, that increase should not apply. Now, if you're going back and forth to see a lot of money down there, and it's your money, it will apply.
I think if I may chime in on that point, I think part of the intention here was for people who are maybe doing research, but of a kind that isn't maybe on a grant or isn't associated with a lab, say a student in English who goes to the New York Public Library for a research trip over the weekend.
So I think if there's a strong enough belief from this body and you want them to examine that, that would not be an inappropriate request to make. You know, as he's saying, they could change the business rule that could allow members of the Cornell community to purchase at a discounted rate based upon their net ID and user affiliate, university affiliation. That's easy data for them to have. But they would probably put some limit on the number of tickets so that, again, you're not, you know, I'm not buying a ticket for my family at a discounted rate because that would actually be inappropriate. They could also roll back the fare increase, but that's a budget deficit they've got to solve. So I think if the concern really is how does this address the legitimate, although not sponsored, research, you know, that would be a particular question I would encourage you to either in the form of a resolution to talk to them about it or just an inquiry. As for expansion of service, they are trying to track. They know that Friday and Sundays are particularly bad, so they're trying to see is there enough demand to merit additional runs. And they have responded before. They used to have 2 runs, now they have 3, so they are trying to monitor that. They are also looking at potential sponsorship for another city, but we are also sensitive trying to balance bus transportation with airline transportation. And you know, the loss of air service to LaGuardia that starts next month is pretty dramatic, even though many people think Newark is just as good, but for the Roosevelt Island project in particular, it's going to be really a problem. So it's a complicated inquiry. So they are looking at new service, they're looking at monitoring the demand, and I would encourage you to express formally if it's a concern. Okay?
Any other quick thoughts on that or on any other topic?
Anything else that you want to raise?
I just have one more question.
Sure.
So going back to question number 2, I think
yep.
You mentioned, or you mentioned the Cornell Biomedical Campus, or Biomedical Campus. Are they looking at the structure of that, potentially even hypothetically changing it with the addition of the Cornell Biomedical Campus?
Not yet.
I know it's a very old and story, but it's...
I mean, you have a brand new dean, and so she may have some different views, and I think certainly you can imagine longer term how you knit together the Ithaca campus, the Weill Cornell campus, the Cornell New York Tech campus is absolutely what's in order. But I think right in the very immediate first couple of years, you know, we got to get all the jots and tittles that the mayor is telling us in place so he'll give us the keys on December 13th before he leaves office, then tear down the hospital, build the building, get Cornell New York Tech going, and then let's figure out how we really leverage the incredible opportunities that we'll have.
Any other thoughts or questions?
Just one additional thought. Realizing the graduate education sits across the various colleges and departments, that this will not be a unilateral decision on any part by our new or the graduate school about how students enroll, faculty from the student services and the president and the provost, but all of the colleges who will have faculty or program in residence there will have to be working together to develop it. So I would encourage student input, student comments at all of those levels. You know, talk to the faculty in your field, talk to the key departments and colleges.
I just think one of our things that we'll want to do this spring is try to figure out the more formal ways to have those conversations, and that's all part of this administrative structure. I guess before I conclude, just as a follow-up, we spent quite a bit of time with this group talking about mental health issues, and I know that we had this wonderful conversation with diverse leaders and some work going on some of the advocacy, but Brenda has received some funding from Dean Youth and from me to help create a new introductory video that you may have heard about that we did at the undergraduate level 3 years ago. It was called Real Students, Real Story. That's what they called it for the undergraduate. And we are going to provide funding to create an appropriately comparable one for the graduate professional community. And so I really encourage, as she begins to work with you, to figure out how best to collect the issues and those things that you wish you had heard from a student voice upon entrance that would have demystified the experience or maybe opened some doors. That's really the intent of it. That has been approved, and I think they're waiting for a response back from the appropriate producer. So I think that'll be a good addition. So I please work with her to have that happen. I think it'll be a nice step forward.
Thank you. Let's thank Vice President. With that, we'll move to the next item on our agenda, which is the Graduate Professional Student Department Rate Study and Recommendation, featuring Marty Rocker et al. Come on down.
Can I say anything?
Certainly. You may want to stand sort of off to the side a little bit, a little bright in front.
So I am Marty Rocker, and et al. Is Barbara Romano and Harry Boston, who were actually one of the team members who worked on this project are here in the room. Fred Hilbert was also on the committee. There were nine of us all together, including two graduate students, Dave West and Rich Blondell. But it is part of the administrative streamlining program, which is an outgrowth of the consultancy from Bain and Company back in 2008. I guess we'll hit the next slide. The SAS initiative was a part of the overall attempt to address the university structural deficit, and it was identified from Bain that we had some ways to save money and contribute to fixing the problem. And over all NSAS, it was $1.9 million that was identified. Darney had $700,000 that was done in increments over a series of years. That wasn't a particular committee that worked on it, but it was a series of lots of small actions in terms of reducing the size, changing the administrative structure, looking for ways to save on purchasing, and all the things that Diamond does on a daily basis to keep things as affordable as possible. Athletics and physical education, just under $500,000, mostly in the area of self-funding of sports. Conference services was another committee that was on space utilization during the summer season of conference services. And that committee has recently submitted its report, but not yet to the sponsors, which I think we're due to do next week. So we're well underway with that one, but we're also still on that committee. And then housing, we were looking at $500,000. The committee talked about a lot of different things. There was an earlier committee that looked at the potential of somewhat larger dollar amounts that included the examination of moving undergraduates into Hasbro. Bain and the original group were looking at data from 2008, in which we were looking at a significant occupancy deficit. Between 2008 and this past summer, that picture changed dramatically. We'll look at those details in a minute. But in order to tell the rest of the story, I think we need to do a little bit of history, and starting with occupancy, which will bring us to the next slide. History is next. And then Barbara's going to take over and walk us through some of the history.
So one thing we'll show you after the history is just of the occupancy rate, and you can see that through the graph how we've had occupancy kept dropping off. But even as early as 2005, we found ourselves with a number of vacancies. And then what happened was with Katrina, we did end up hosting or housing some students from Tulane that came to the university, and we did utilize Hasbro for some of those students, not all of them. And then in fall 2006, which was fiscal year 07, We piloted 10 apartments, so we offered 10 apartments to undergraduate students in room selection. And we had a small turnout. We had about, we filled about 3 or 4 apartments through that process, and we're really trying to measure how we could accommodate undergraduates and how if that was at all possible. And then part of what drove that was in the fall 2007, what happened was that there was an announcement that the West Campus project would be accelerated. And in order to do that, with residence halls, with some of our residence halls going down, we did need to accommodate more undergraduates. And that's why we went into fall 2007 offering those apartments for transfer students. And then, and through those conversations, we had been in touch with the GPSA, trying to talk through this so that they were aware that undergraduates were going in, how we strategically placed them in Hattiesburg amongst the graduate students, and then what would their program look like compared to the graduate student program. In 2008, then, Hasbrook and for that, we also had to pull over Thurston Court for undergraduates to really meet that demand. And then in 2008, Hasbrook and Thurston Court transitioned back to the graduate housing portfolio. And then in 2009, because we had been in conversation with graduate students, we still found ourselves coming up short with the Fed capacity for our graduates. In conversation with the graduate students and with our the housing and campus life, we decided to transition Schuyler House into the undergraduate housing portfolio. And then, so we did that, and we also at the same time introduced the shared apartments in Hasbrook. So we allowed 2 unrelated graduate students to move into Hasbrook. And we have seen that that's really been a good demand for that, and we continue to offer that. So in the next slide. So here you can really see the graduate housing occupancy and how it kept dropping. As you see, it increased a little bit in 2005, and that was because of our students from Tulane, and then it continued to decrease, and then when we introduced the 60-40s, we started to see an increase in that, and the transition with Skyler also helped accommodate the undergraduates. So.
As a little bit of background, I don't know if you realize, but by mandated board of trustees, we are obligated to provide housing to all first-year students, sophomores who meet deadlines, and new transfer students. So that's why when we took buildings down on West Campus and eliminated some beds, that we needed additional capacity in order to meet that mandate. And that gave rise to, well, where are we going to find the beds? Occupancy was low. Let's work with the GPSA to see if this is possible. And it was for that year with the promise that we wouldn't do it again. But when ASP came around and we were still looking for beds, still looking at that in 2008 when it was on the downswing again, it was presented as an option on the table, which this group that met over the summer said, we don't want to do that because we see the demand that is rising, particularly with the change in policy in the 60-40s and being able to accommodate more graduate students in that program. So, still faced with the need to identify funding, we took a look at our competitive position in the area in terms of race. We had, because of the low occupancy numbers, been systematically suppressing rate increases. We were doing it at much lower increments than we saw in the undergraduate side. And we kind of lagged behind the local apartment market. We also noted, in looking at peer institutions that we were less than many of our peers. So it looked like that was where there was some room to move to normalize rates, and up with first looking at an increment of $100 or 10%, and then went back to the drawing board and looked at a few other minor tweaks. We looked at some changes in programs of working with medical college, working with some other programs of doing some brain changes there, and picked up a little bit of income that way. But the bulk of it was the final recommendation of the next slide. $50 or 5% above the cost of living increase for a year, and that got us to approaching $500,000, and we're looking forward to meet the ASP. So we're ready for questions.
Thanks very much. Are there any questions? Mitch?
What percentage of graduate students in total and professional students live in the
between 12% and 13%?
And how is that?
That's our capacity is 12%. The new rate, okay. Yeah, I think there's potentially some risk in this and that. We may be perceived as less competitive in the market. We know by next fall there are going to be more apartments in the local community, but we don't know what else as well.
Rebecca?
It's full in the fall. We open at capacity. It's
the
spring semester when we have students graduate out or leave for an extension.
Looks to me, I mean, at the beginning of the semester in April when we had two in. It's very, very small.
Crystal?
I was curious to know if there are any plans for future
preparation
or not
professional
housing?
For undergraduate housing? We've been talking for some time about a replacement for medical work. And there is a plan. We're hoping to get started as early as 2014. There's a meeting tomorrow where we're going to start talking about how we might make that happen.
Other questions?
Does anyone in the room live in graduate
housing? Someone in the back.
This one.
So what you're saying is 12% of this room doesn't live. You seem not to be very representative.
Did any of you at all when you first came?
I did.
So why is Maplewood going to be in place? I live there.
Structurally, there's a lot of work that needs to be done. If not the best use of that footprint, we could probably serve more students.
It's all
that. Before I said that it's on the moment, but all of the Maplewood? All of it?
The loan for Maplewood is determined to be paid off in 14,
yeah.
And I believe it was a 30-year financing. So it's about it's modular housing that was put there, and it was financed over a 30-year time frame. So I think the general belief is it's not a style of housing that is worth renovating, quite frankly. And given that clause, the fact that the inefficient use of that footprint, to go in and upgrade, unlike Hasbrook, where we went in and upgraded it and expanded it, this is actually better off to be taken down and start again with that footprint.
I was just wondering why, given that it's full and not another, would it be reasonable to increase your rate? for Maplewood? Like, do you think there is enough changing?
I think our
feedback
for Maplewood.
Why is that?
We did not apply this rate increase to the family.
I'm going to find the housing.
I'll get $50 per month. Right, but we did not add any other rates.
Right, that's correct. There's a $50 increase for Maplewood residents if they CO, but there's no increase on top of that. So, and with Hansbrook or our other graduate properties, it would be, what we've done is we've introduced the $50 increase for students that continue to occupy, go through the CO process. They'll see a 2% increase, where new contract holders will see a 4% increase on top of the $50 increase.
Yevgeny?
So one other thing that I think came up at GPSA a while back is that I think that Cornell offers is the least percentage of housing to graduate students compared to other Ivy Leagues.
They've got better data on that in front of them.
And I don't know if that's true, but I'm just wondering if the gentleman's question is about the rate of increasing housing even more dramatically. Because I think one of the issues is credit finance seems an option, but it's not the, but I think it's important to something that students would encourage them to do because it wasn't, I think, more than that day. So I think if there's more availability, it would be more than that.
And when we talk, when we start talking about replacement for Maplewood and being able to do something more dense, then we could start talking about what's the appropriate number of spaces to make available to graduate students.
So that's something that would be interesting.
Sure. You know, we have to look at that. We're going to have to use extensive market analysis about what the demand is, what we can sell, what makes sense for the institution.
We're going to look at what
students
want, and currently, you know, configuration may not be the ideal.
YJ?
It has been mentioned in the discussion when we decided that a lot of the graduate student housing is occupied by first year international students. I'm wondering if you have any figures on that, and whether or not you consider, having people from foreign countries with less resources available to them. And trying to more a very, welcoming thing to do. You mentioned that the rate increase is the highest for the first year contract holder requirements.
We did a lot of research on who lives with us, and we did see that there was a high demand for first year international students. And that was one of the reasons we wanted to maintain the housing we have for graduates and not move it to undergraduate use because of that, because of wanting to serve that first year international population. So we did look at that as a priority.
Can I just speak on behalf of Agassiz? What those of you who haven't lived on campus might not know that there's no security deposit. There's no first month, last month. So actually, even if the rate is a percentage higher than comparable off-campus housing, that upfront investment of money is not the same. And that's one of the cost-benefit analysis I think people look at when they choose to live on campus. The other, I think standard for international students, they just figure that it's university-owned housing is going to be safer, it's going to be better, and if you don't have a chance to come and look at it, it's just a shorter bet. So even though it might seem a little pricey, or the price increase to be structured such that first-year students would be paying a little bit more, I think overall, when you compare it to the external market, it actually does provide a value and a service value.
It includes all utilities which off campus may or may not happen. So sometimes there are hidden costs in deciding to lease off campus that aren't evident from the get go.
Maybe one more question. Oh, James.
Yes, I was curious when the occupancy rates were really low, what was the surveying mechanism that you
all used to see why they were low, and like how did you reach out to the graduate community to ask about
that? Back in 2008?
There was a survey in 07 for that. I remember, you know more about this than I do. There was a survey at some point that
But I think, you know, just in general, the phone call, what we know we're turning away.
Right.
We know we can't help. I think that generated this idea of doing the, well, it's not related to the people who are honored with you every year. But I think a lot of it is knowing who we were and being able to do it.
Do you have any interview?
I actually do. The trajectory downward in occupancy, I believe, started when we started disallowing too much related people to live in Hasbro. We had sort of an endemic or epidemic of unrelated two persons living together or three persons living together, and the Hasbro contracts were structured only for families. And so, in order to cut down on that, we disallowed that. We had to be in a partnered or a family situation to take occupancy at Hasbro. At the same time, we started allowing cookie shops and other visitors who were in a more similar family situation. So I'm not sure if your numbers of contracts reflect visitor contracts and postdocs. I'm not sure if that graph reflects that, but the actual vacancy rate or the actual occupancy rate was a little bit higher, but they weren't student occupancy. And that was part of, that's why that dip is more dramatic than it might otherwise be if you looked at some other form of measurement. So because the university is by the board of trustees, because we have students, and particularly first and second year undergrad, before outsiders or before non-student categories or affiliated community members, that was sort of one of the calculations that happened in that 05 to 08 kind of dip. We started looking at students. And so I think they're right on point with the idea of there is a greater demand for single students in the Hasbro complex compared to partners, family. And Evan and I kind of go back and forth about the cause of that. Is it that the number of partners or family grad students numbers have gone down paralleling this? Or are there other factors? And I think we really don't know. I mean, I don't know. What I can tell you is over the last probably decade and a half at the Hasbro complex, the number of dependent children has gone down significantly, and I think that parallels pretty strongly the number of people coming back to grad school once they have families has also gone down. But I'm making that up a little bit just based on what I've seen in the student population rather than any specific numbers or census data.
The sense that I get is that we don't have a lot of great demographic data on married versus single students, on who has children and who doesn't have children. A lot of the information we have is either sample surveys or it's sort of self-selecting people seeking out information, signing themselves up for this sort of thing. I know that there are initiatives afoot to do a better job, you know, knowing who the students are. Unless there are any other burning questions, I'm certainly happy to transmit in writing any questions that arrive. At this point, I would suggest that we thank our guests for their time. And so with that, we move on to the remainder of our agenda. The first item of business is the approval of the minutes from January 23rd. We sent out sent out by email to the list. Are there any corrections to the minute?
Yes.
Mia?
In the question on the finance commission, it says, second sentence, she claims there is currently at the 11,000 multiplying group. That was, that's a slight mistake in language. There was 11,000 left at the beginning of that book, so that can just be changed to explain that, there is currently, she explains that at the beginning of September there was only 11,000 left, and there were still a lot of applications coming in.
She explained that at the beginning of December there was only $11,000 left to fund groups, and there are a lot of applications. Is that correct?
Well, maybe change the second part to the R instead of R.
There were.
Yeah. I mean, there are still, but keep it with that.
Is there any objection? Seeing none, the minutes are so amended. Are there any further amendments to the minutes? Seeing none, is there any objection to the approval of the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are hereby approved. Reports of officers and committee updates. First, yours truly. Resolution 8 that we passed at our meeting 2 weeks ago, creating a committee. That committee still needs members. I don't know if John Chechelewski has graciously agreed to chair that committee. I don't know if you want to speak briefly.
Should be a lot of work. It's pretty exciting because you get to see a lot of the old lectures. You get to kind of brainstorm the types of people that would impact the most this community, the Cornell community. But it's a really interesting task to select a speaker to come over reunion weekend. And right now it's just information gathering. I've reached out to a few professors on their opinions and to other students that have selected other speakers. So, if you'd like to join and help out, your help is really appreciated. And that's my spiel. So.
But John can be the carrot, I'll be the stick. So the graduate school reached out to us for input. If we can't muster a couple more people who are interested in providing this input, I think it reflects negatively on the GPSA, and it reflects negatively on our future chances that the graduate school will reach out to us. So I really do please strongly encourage you to volunteer for opportunities like this. Thank you. Next on our list is Resolution 9, Vice President Murphy. You know the history. Basically, we, as you know, passed this resolution 2 weeks ago. The resolution with the same language was passed by the Student Assembly last Thursday. There was one person who voted against it, but, I mean, near unanimous approval. People are in favor of this. It was forwarded to the Board of Trustees. The resolution has been accepted. Not that there was really much doubt that it would be, so we'll continue with the same system. That would be grad students are eligible to run in even years, and undergraduate students are eligible to run in odd years, and all students get to vote in all years. Speaking of opportunities to provide your input to the graduate school, they've asked us, they've reached out to us for input on orientation. This is also, I think, connected in some ways to what Vice President Murphy mentioned, this video. You know, this is a great opportunity to share your thoughts about, you know, what do you wish you'd known when you arrived at Cornell 1 year ago, 2, 3, 4 years ago, whatever. How might you communicate that to students? They're looking for a broad base of input, PhD students, a master's student, and a student from one of the three professional schools. Would be great. That said, if there were a groundswell of people interested in this, we might be able to find a way to accommodate that. Brenda's not shaking her head at me, but she's also not nodding either.
Yes,
so
no, absolutely. Anybody who wants to opine or otherwise be involved, we generally waited until like the new framework of GPSA officers come on board, and because orientation happens so early in the year, it's always been kind of a chaotic process to get the grad input. So this year we're just starting a little bit earlier and hoping it's not too arduous. I mean, probably a maximum of 3 meetings, maybe. Most of it will be done via email. And it'd just be great to have as much input as you guys can sponsor.
It's really a wonderful opportunity. If this is something that interests you, please see me or see Brenda.
Steve might have an opinion about coffee and donuts, so
yeah.
He might.
Steve is someone that I had on my list of people to encourage to do this. And someone who was very actively involved last year and might have thoughts about that. Good. Show him positive. Let the record reflect that Steve nodded. quick. Rebecca.
No decaf. And more coffee.
Yeah, well. This is a great topic for discussion for those that are interested in this. A quick show of hands. Have any of you, do you have now or have you had in the past classes that take place during, between the 4:30 to 7:30 period? Is something that has happened? Yeah, they either start before and go into it or continue in that and continue after it. Anything that has taken place during that? So I'm counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18. So that's about half the people in the room, roughly. A quick show of hands, is this a problem? Does this interfere with your dining plans, with your study plans, and so on and so forth? Or is it basically not an issue? Is it a problem? Hands up. Hands, just a couple hands. Thank you. A little bit of background, you may know that there is a rule in the faculty handbook that prevents the scheduling of undergraduate classes during this period, but it doesn't prevent the scheduling of graduate classes during this period. So we're you know, doing some looking into it. And then three quick points from the grad school. One is all of you should have today received the first brand new graduate school announcements, which feature a wonderfully spiffed up presentation, a welcome message from Dean Newth, and you may all have noticed that they were sent directly to you from the graduate school instead of being forwarded by your GFA. So this is in response to feedback that came from the GPSA, the thought being that if all students are supposed to receive these announcements anyway, why don't we make sure that they happen in a timely and direct fashion, certainly many students reported that their GFAs often took a few days, which meant that deadlines could be missed for scholarships or registration deadlines or that sort of thing. So certainly we're all very excited about that. I know that the graduate school is also very keen for any feedback you may have, you know, the kind of things you do and don't want to see, and what's most useful to you in those announcements. The graduate school is making progress on career services for, what's the least politically incorrect way to say this? Trailing partners. So when, of course, one graduate student is accepted here and there in a long-term relationship and they come with a partner, of course, moving to an area like Ithaca can present some difficulties that aren't the case if you're moving to a place like Boston or New York or Chicago, and there are many opportunities. So there's a great service for this that is already present in HR. The grad school is reaching out to them to work to try and propagate that for grad students as well. And finally, along those same lines, financial services, that I think it's basically like things like retirement planning, financial education, that sort of thing. Again, these are resources that staff currently have and where the graduate school is working on ways to make sure those same options are available for grad students if they choose. That's it for me.
Just a
question. Yes, listen.
If anyone was interested in career services or partners in the financial services, is there like a point person?
Talk to Brenda. Love it. Going to say talk to me. If in doubt, the answer is talk to Brenda. Thanks, Elizabeth. Any other questions on those points? Seeing no other things from my fellow executive members. Appropriations, Chris left the meeting, so I assume that means he doesn't have an update. Negotiations with Slope Day continue, he would probably say if we were here. Communications, Steve.
Yeah, I just want to take this opportunity. So this is about the time of year when the GPSA leadership starts thinking about who's going to replace us next year. And for the communications committee, that was particularly important because, as you know, we recently gained the ability to all graduate professional students with the GPS that was used to it. So I thought it'd be kind of a shame, you know, if whoever is here next year kind of dropped them all. So I just want to get one to start thinking about if you'd be interested in taking over my position and basically running the newsletter. I promise you it's not a huge time in it. I probably spend only about a couple of hours per week on responsibilities. We've got the whole process for, you know, getting the newsletter out soon pretty well, so that's pretty efficient and goes basically generally. And don't worry if you're not tech savvy. We don't need to be a PhD student in computer science to run it. So I'll show you, and I'll be here for the fall semester, so I'll be there as a counselor to do that. So yeah, if you're interested, please let me know. You know, it's not a difficult position, but it does require you to be timely and consistent and have an eye for the field. So yeah, that's all. Thank you.
That's certainly a great point for everybody. We do our elections for voting membership on this body in the middle of April, and then we elect our officers at the end of April. It's never too soon to start thinking about, you know, if you want to run for a voting member position. I'm sure that anybody in this room would be happy to talk to you about what that's like. If you're interested in officer positions, that's great too, or other ways to get involved. Next on our list is Finance Commission. Nia.
Hi, not much to update, just that we have a meeting tomorrow night that will be reviewing the application that did last week then. Terry in the Office Assembly is taken over from Michelle. It might take her a few days, maybe a week, to get back to any of you who might submit an application, because she's dealing with FASC applications as well right now. So don't panic if it takes a few days.
Thanks, Mia. Student Advocacy, Rebecca.
We're finishing the office of the conversation from January back again. So last time our meeting, they took it, and we're thinking about other issues, keeping my targets with similar format. There actually is a lot of interest on this meeting to still focus on the other topic in the moment, so I'm expecting also to have some if you guys have any other ideas for issues to target, definitely reach out to.
Thank you. Finally, Programming Board, why?
If you could take one or two and post them near where you live, that'd be awesome. Thank you. So, first of all, Wednesday we have an annual mixer. You think it'd be really fun. Please come by for however long you make it. And this time I'm trying to explore that a lot more people are in psychology, but if you're interested in using people from these fields, please come by. For the bigger barn is actually on its 20th anniversary as a graduate promotional student center today, February 6th when they open. So from what I understand, they're serving cake this afternoon. And tonight, while they're open, I don't know if it's done out yet, I haven't checked. And
I think by 5:15 and they still have the cake and pork.
Oh, and they're going to have pork.
They ran pork if you stop by
and so this week and this weekend will be some celebrations having to do with that. There's going to be a special TGIF at the usual time, 4:30 in Dubai on Friday, where they will serve some special food as a surprise. And then afterwards, the programming board is helping plan a birthday party where they have Chinese themed food and music. So it should be fun. Please come out. Happy New Year's over. I need help. So we need some preparation for that away. And we're close to getting burnt out during all of this. We would love for people to come out and help for half an hour at the door. It's a lot of fun explaining to people and watching people come in. Just half an hour is needed. I need a free beer. So sign up through this email or me. And then for the bigger grand party, if some people could help, I only need one or two for the set up for TGIA or a clinical study. If you're interested in doing that, also email me. My email. Please write that down. Thank you.
Thanks, YJ. Unless there's any objection, why don't we do open forum now? Seeing no objection,
Are there any items from the floor for open forum?
I just had a question, and this is something I'm still not very clear on, and my department was interested. What exactly, this is going back again to the old questions, don't they? Are we going to be paying tickets this year or that year?
No.
No, we need to.
The fee that we just passed in the fall takes effect next fiscal year. So the soonest any changes would happen would be in the spring of 2013.
That's what I thought.
I'll make sure. Thanks, Veronica. Any other thoughts, questions, etc.? Seeing none, we'll move into our breakout session. So we're going to break out by topic today. This is at the end of the meeting. Feel free to stay after 7. I know we've only got 12 minutes left on the clock. Or leave at 7 if you have to. We'll go in four groups. Transportation issues, we'll meet with Marquise. Big Red Barn dining options, we'll meet with Nicole. Graduate student housing, we'll meet with yours truly. Health and wellness, with Rebecca. Thanks, everybody. Thanks for a good meeting.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.